people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Marching on the wars we fight, writing about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing and be a warning. If you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to you. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. And you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down to fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com, but also at alt-righttv.com as well. Well, some outrageous stories today of the complete trampling of civil rights in Canada. A fellow who is describes himself as a snowbird. That is, he is one of those Canadians who flees our winter cold and goes and spends some time in Florida or Arizona. drove back from Florida this week to his home in Prince Edward Island. Now, there are only three ways to get on the island. You can fly in, you can take a boat, or you can cross the bridge. There's a long, long bridge over, I think, some 20 miles of water. Anyway, as he approached this bridge, he was stopped by the police and asked where he was going. He said, well, I have a house on Prince Edward Island. But they said, well, you've got Ontario license plates. And he said, yes. He had omitted to change his registration. Now, he had a valid Ontario registration, so also he was driving without a license or with expired tags. But anyway, they would not let him go. He could not prove, at least to their satisfaction, that he was a resident of the island. He said, but I want a home here. Well, it didn't matter. Was he arrested? Well, he said he was spent about 6 months of the year in the United States with his American girlfriend, and then came up to the island for 6 months. Well, he was turned away. And he said, you know, basically, I'm living in my car. What am I supposed to do? So he is returning to Ontario, where he has grown-up children and family. He's a 60-year-old man who's in the construction trades. And I guess he will have to, if he can get one from a government office. Don't forget, a lot of government departments are shut down, if he can get change his, well, wait a second, I'm not sure if he can do that. If he, he'll somehow have to change his registration to Prince Edward Island. That may be difficult to do because I think he might have to go there in person, but he can't because, I mean, for one thing, this is a gross attack on freedom of movement. And this is an elementary right in Canada, the free movement of citizens across this country. We're not yet in the situation where you have to have a police pass to go from one city to another. I'm not sure we even had that in wartime, but that's the sort of thing that you would have in a police state. You need a pass to travel in this country. This is certifiably nutty, but that's happening. I was even more disturbed by the reaction to this story on a talk radio show. It starts at 7 o'clock in the evening with a woman named Barb DiGiulio, and she recounted the basics of the story. And then went on to say, well, she wasn't very sympathetic. First of all, the fellow should have changed his registration on his license, etc., a year ago or so when he moved from Ontario to PEI, and it was his legal obligation to do that. And several callers called in, oh, they agreed with that. Now, I mean, I agree, he probably should have. But that should keep him from... The police did not stop him because his paperwork wasn't in order. They stopped him because they didn't want him to go to Prince Edward Island because he couldn't prove he was an islander, even though he in fact could show he owned a house there. Well, is it your principal residence? My question would be, or my retort would be, so what? I might be a gazillionaire and have residences in six places around the world. What should it matter? He's a Canadian citizen. He should have the right to go wherever he wants. And I found it actually more disturbing, the censorious attitude of the talk show host and one other voice and the caller. And it was hinted several times that he may have gotten a little hot under the collar in the way he spoke to the police. Well, he had every right to get hot under the collar. Well, if anything, the situation gets even more frightening. I had word yesterday that... in fact, I'd like to give it to you exactly as it was sent to me. Actually, from the same part of Ontario, up at a place called Southampton on Lake Huron, we had a report last Thursday that a local grocery store in the town of Southampton was demanding licenses. Driver's licenses from would-be shoppers, and if they were from out of town, that is Ontario, big cities but like Toronto or London, they would not sell the provisions. Now, this is outrageous that you'd have to prove where you came from to be able to buy their probably overpriced produce. The thing is, some of these towns don't want the city dwellers who own property up there, who own a cottage or a cabin, or to come up. They've been convinced by some government authorities that they'll be bringing the coronavirus with them. I've got news for them. The coronavirus may already be in their community. I mean, most of these places are not completely isolated. People travel around the province. The virus may already be there. Or people just traveling through from point A to point B and stopping at a gas station or stopping at a convenience store could be bringing the virus. I agree. There's reasonable concern. You don't want the virus entering the community, if possible. Which means you can request that people follow the social, the social distancing or the stay 6 feet apart rule. But this is outrageous. Well, this was sent to me yesterday by a contact in Calgary who got it from a contact in Ontario. And this is what was sent to me. Doug in Ontario forwarded a note he'd received via relatives. A relative of his lives in Southampton, Ontario. The internet describes it as a community on the shores of Lake Huron in Bruce County, and close to Port Elgin. This is what his contact wrote. Went to the grocery store. Cops are going to houses checking out license plates. If people don't live there, they are fine, getting fined. This side of the river, they've been concentrating, so I've been told. Anyone can call cops on those who are not obeying the law, and they automatically get $2,000 for reporting. A friend of this woman, Colleen, lives in Dornoch, Ontario, which is close by, and she called the OPP to see if this was true. They said that they couldn't tell her anything because it was confidential. I find that beyond outrageous. Finding people, if they don't live there, finding them for what? Now, I have trouble believing that the cops are giving out $2,000 to snitches. But when this woman called the OPP, what was she told? Was she just told, no, absolutely, that's not true? No, she was told it's confidential. Well, that's a typical cop talk and evasion. So let's assume it is true then. Seeing that they won't deny it, we'll have to assume it is true. And I think that's we are quickly moving our way to a police state. There is pressure in many parts of Ontario, in cottage country, to keep out of town people out. Out of town people who incidentally own the property. We're not talking about people coming from out of town and squatting. I mean, you mean like illegal immigrants? No, nothing like that. We're talking about people who own a cottage or a property, who want to come to the rural area to enjoy their property and to get away from the big city. Perfectly legitimate. Well, not according to our leaders. Justin Trudeau, having commiserated in advance with people about having to, spend Easter away from family and not gathering and all those things and congratulating them on making sacrifices. In fact, spent the Easter weekend at the official Prime Minister's rural residence at Huntington Lake. I don't begrudge him that. He said he'd been apart from the family because he'd been self-quarantining because he had the corona, he tested positive. He'd been in some quarantine for two weeks. And he was complaining that he hadn't seen the family. Totally understand, totally agree. Except, that should apply to others. But it doesn't. And this is part of the hypocrisy of our ruling elite. Some of the excuses for or some of the reasons offered for not allowing people to go to their own cottages or trying to discourage them border on the laughable. And this is from today's National Post. Traveling puts people at risk of car accidents, breakdown, even unplanned bathroom breaks, all of which can unnecessarily risk spreading infection. Even in happy isolation with groceries from the city, people still have heart attacks, strokes, slips and falls, accidents chopping firewood, all sorts of things that could put a new cohort of people into immediate contact with rural emergency responders. Now, it's hard to imagine such a weak, fanciful list of possible catastrophes. It's quite true. A person could get into a car accident and have to go to a hospital, fall and, injure oneself, have a heart attack, I suppose. But statistically, how likely is that? We're talking of perhaps, we're told maybe 1,500 people throughout the province of Ontario ignored the non-binding advice. Well, that's all it was. It was that China woman's, Teresa Tam, our Canada's Chief Medical Officer of Health, it was her opinion. She's entitled to her opinion. She's not entitled to enforce it on me. Well, 1,500 people supposedly disobeyed that. Statistically, what is the chance? How many of those people in, let's say, a week are likely to require hospitalization, either from a car accident, a fall, a heart attack, a stroke, or some other accident? Well, I would be quite surprised if that figure was more than one or two. Now, don't forget, that spread over a whole range of cottage country in the province of Ontario. In other words, statistically speaking, this is one big nothing burger. This is utter scare tactics. And yet this is what is being foisted on Canadians. The same thing has happened in the Kootenay area of British Columbia, where some local officials were even asking the province to do something to keep people out. Not everyone took the message to heart, and by last week, the East Kootenay Regional District was asking the British Columbia government to shut the border with Alberta to keep recreational travelers away. To shut the border with another province. There is a certain degree of insanity, of leaving their senses behind. Oh, here's another example. Cancellation of drive-in church service question. This is from Saskatchewan, in Nipawin, or Nipawin, I guess. The Saskatchewan Premier wants an explanation for why an Easter drive-in service was prohibited over the weekend. Premier Scott Moe's office said the Saskatchewan Health Authority has been asked to account for its decision, as drive-in events seem to maintain safe physical distances. It's like you would go to a drive-in movie. You are about 6 feet or more from the next car. And in fact, here, the request from the pastor was that people keep the windows of their car up, and it would be pretty cold in Saskatchewan. That wouldn't be too difficult. And they'd be able to hear the sermon over their radio. And this is what the premier said. While we must remain vigilant in observing physical distancing, we should also encourage innovative and unique ideas that support the ability of Saskatchewan residents to pull together while staying apart, the premier's office said. Other churches in Canada have held drive-in services. Moe's office noted that hundreds of people were allowed to pay tribute on Monday to the family of Edmonton Oilers hockey player Colby Cave, who died of a brain bleed in Toronto. Vehicles stretched several kilometers, along the highway as the family returned to Battleford, Saskatchewan for a funeral. Now the people were in their cars, and they weren't bothered. Jordan Gadsby, lead pastor of the Nipawin Apostolic Church, said people were invited to an arena parking lot where they could tune into Easter Sunday church service from inside vehicles. Gadsby said people in the community were excited about the event, which would have met physical distancing requirements because nobody needed to step outside of a vehicle or even roll down their windows. It's good for people to have something to look forward to, even if we're not really in the same space, he said. Well, then on Saturday, just before the Easter Sunday service, a public health official said the complaints had been made. We're becoming a snitch society. Complaints had been made. Why would somebody complain? If you don't want to go to this service, by all means, don't go. Why would you phone in and complain? Well, there's self-righteous, politically correct mischief-making. I've got a rat in my neighbor because he's a Christian. I've got a rat out my neighbor. And this is what the pastor said. I believe the wording was that you're strongly recommended not to do this, and we consider this to be a mass gathering which goes against the public health guidelines. A mass gathering, even though people are in cars. By the same token, a traffic jam is also a mass gathering, by that definition. He told the official that worshippers wouldn't have physical contact, but there was still concern people would leave their vehicles and visit with one another. To avoid placing the church and anyone attending at risk of being fined, the church decided to cancel the event. That's what I call, if you'll excuse my vulgarity, an asshole rule. And what that means is it presumes that adults, or a significant number of them, will be assholes or fools. So, on the basis that some people might leave their cars and socialize, even though they would have been told not to do that, on the suspicion that they might, the public health authority wanted the religious gathering shut down. And we see this more and more. Adult Canadians, you're not going to be driving a car unless you are legally an adult. Adult Canadians are being treated like irresponsible fools and children. That's not only insulting. I argue it's extremely bad psychologically, because it begins to send the message that you're a child. And you know, after a while, people begin to behave like children. That's what I fear. You'll treat me as a child repeatedly, and maybe I begin to behave like a child. Maybe even trying to be a bit mischievous and get away with something
the way a child might. Treat me like an adult. Tell me, you know, what the concerns are, what the regulations are, and I will, most of the time, go along with it. Well, I forced myself, and I say this not charitably at all, forced myself to go over a back issue of the Anglican Journal. This is the newspaper of the Anglican, or in the United States, it would be called the Episcopalian Church of Canada. It is a very left-wing sect. And here's this is a 7/8 of a tabloid page. Considering an Anglican apology, and it's written by Albert Dumont, who is a spiritual teacher in residence at Christ Church Cathedral in Ottawa. And he offers his thoughts on the apology for spiritual harm the church caused Indigenous people. That was issued at the General Synod in 2019, that was last year. So his name is Albert Dumont. I don't know what he is. He's a spiritual teacher. His Indian name is South Wind. Forgive me, I have trouble taking this seriously. He starts off a rather windy column by talking about a piece of wisdom that he received many years ago from an old Cree. And most of this is borders on the incomprehensible. Then he gets into who defines what sin is. By what means does the Creator measure the weight of sin? The Indigenous people of this land who embrace the spiritual beliefs given to them by Creator many thousands of years ago know very well that it is the waters, trees, animals, fish, and birds on whose backs many of the sins committed by human beings are placed. What we abuse and destroy of the Creator's making will assuredly have a say on what will become of us on the day of reckoning. The bird or plant who became extinct because of our actions, the animal who endured a long and agonizing death while in a merciless the merciless grip of a leg trap. The once pure waters of an underground spring now filled with poisons. These things have their chance to finally be heard. This is the most a pathetic wallowing in guilt. I don't like to see a species of bird, of animal, or plant become extinct. And I certainly would do what might be in my power to prevent that from happening. But I'm not personally responsible, nor do I feel any guilt for the several creatures in North America, like the passenger pigeon, that became extinct. And truth be told, although this almost all seems to be aimed at the white man, primitive as their technology was, the native Indians did considerable damage to some of the big herds. For instance, in Alberta, there's a place called Buffalo Leap, where the prairie comes right up to a valley, and the Indians would light fires and drive the buffalo herds toward that cliff. And the buffalo would fall down, die, you know, mangled and maimed at the bottom of the cliff. And the Indians would then come along, and that they would not harvest all of the buffalo. In fact, they would simply cut off its hump, which is where the best meat was, and the rest would be left for the birds of prey and to rot on the prairie. I don't see any recognition of that. This is all, you know, the white man's guilt. He then continues, the indigenous spiritual beliefs of the Anishinaabe, that's the First Peoples, never hurt anyone. Yet many generations of Christians were told by their faith leaders that indigenous spiritual beliefs were a dark and threatening cloud pushed furiously forward and locked into the minds of savages by the scalding breath of the devil. Because of this and because of Canada's Christian foundations, indigenous spirituality was outlawed until the 1950s. To me, at least a monstrous sin was committed by Canada for making it a crime to sing a beautiful song to the Creator with the help of a drum or a rattle. I find this, now I assume that that this fellow Albert Dumont, he's the spiritual teacher in residence at the cathedral. you can't make this stuff up. At the cathedral in Ottawa, I assume he is a I assume that he is a an Anglican. I guess you can't assume that. Well, he says the indigenous spiritual beliefs of the Anishinaabe never hurt anybody. I'm not so sure that's true. The Christians rejected their the Indian pagan beliefs as basically wrong. This man, Albert Dumont, who's called South Wind, would appear to be saying that they were right. You cannot be a believing Christian and say that. Now, you may say the other people's beliefs are worthy of respect, and that you know they hold these in good faith, but it is a sin of indifferentism to say that they are right, or you know, different strokes for different folks. And you know, if there is a reason for the precipitous decline of the Anglican Church of Canada, well, I think there are several, but one of them is a church that actually doesn't believe in anything except a load of guilt. That doesn't seem very attractive. And it basically, this fellow, this spiritual, what is he? I've never even heard of such a thing. A spiritual teacher in residence at the cathedral. If he says that basically the native Indian beliefs were as good as or better than Christianity, or that the Christian forebears were wrong to reject those beliefs, then he's essentially saying there's no particular reason to be a member of the church. If there isn't a belief that what you stand for is correct, or is more correct, let's say, or more in tune with the mind of God, assuming you can know it, than the next faith, then why would you be a member of this faith? Yeah, because if you're not right, what do you remember the faith for? If you don't believe in it, if you don't believe in the righteousness of your own cause, why should anybody else? And that is one of the key reasons that the Anglican faith in Canada is attracting very, very few new people and not holding many of the people who grew up with the faith. Some older people cling to it because that's what they always knew. Many, though, have left. And this absolute worship of the native people is appalling. Anyway, He concludes, but at long last the church has seen fit to apologize to the First Nations, these are Indians, Inuit, those are Eskimos, and Métis people, for the spiritual harm, the actions and the deeds of the church brought to indigenous spirituality. Well, what's the harm of saying, with respect, I think you're wrong, and we have a better way? Well, when you can no longer say that, then you really have no reason to exist. And not to be too picky here, but the Métis people, those are, were mixed race, some might call them half-breeds, mostly the offspring of white males, usually the traders. I said traders, not trade whores, and Indian women. And they became almost a society of their own. They were almost, to a person, Christian. So their spirituality wasn't dissed. Many segments of Christian religions are guilty, but only the Anglicans so far admitted that their condemnation of indigenous spirituality was wrong. The Anglicans are brave and, I believe, righteous. They are ahead of their time. I have a relationship of mutual respect going on presently with the Anglicans. Well, I guess in fact he's not an Anglican. He kind of respects them because they've groveled, but would it be righteous not to testify to what you know and believe? And that's what the Christians up until relatively recently did in terms of native spirit, so-called spirituality. They said, ultimately, you're wrong. We have a better way. We'd like to tell you about our Lord Jesus Christ. That is the spiritual mission of the church. If you believe, or sorry, if you don't believe in the church, if you don't believe that Christianity is right, then frankly you shouldn't be a member. If you do, you have an obligation to tell others, respectfully, that they're wrong, or better still, show them the better way. Preach the word of the Lord. Hard to call it an essay. This thing I only read to you part of it, but it just shows you the lostness of the present Anglican Church. I never ceased to be shocked at the just flaming left-wing aspect of the Anglican Church. And then this is from the current issue, the April issue of the Anglican Journal. And it's all about the Anglicans wanting to sponsor more Syrians. In the fall of 2019, Archbishop Linda Nichols, the primate of the Anglican Church of Canada, sent a letter to Jack Palmer White, the Anglican Communion's permanent representative to the United Nations. The letter, Refugee Sponsorship, A Canadian Anglican Perspective, outlined the Anglican Church of Canada's work in this area since the late 1970s. While many Anglican dioceses have held sponsorship agreements for decades, there's been a marked increase in refugee sponsorship since 2015. According to Nichols' letter, from 2015 to late 2019, a total of 5,192 people have been resettled as refugees through the Anglican sponsorship agreement holders. And an additional 3,558 submitted applications were being processed. I'm sure this sponsoring of refugees gives a great rush to some of the social justice warriors in the Anglican Church. Whether bringing these people to Canada is the right thing is a very open question. Many of these people are very damaged people. They come to Canada and they don't necessarily get undamaged. Is bringing these people, many of them from very radically different societies from our own, is that really doing them a favor? Wouldn't it be better to assist them in refugee camps until the conditions change and they can go back and help rebuild their countries? Well, anyway, I suppose it wouldn't be quite the rush. And so this is what the Anglican Church is about, and I can only say, no wonder more and more the pews are empty. And demographic prediction by somebody working for the Anglican Church was that the Anglican Church will basically slither out of existence in another 20 years. And my feeling is that, you know, when you don't stand for anything, you fall for everything. Well, let's try something just a little more cheerful. And this is some good drinking music from Germany. And hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on Alt-Right TV. Thank you.
Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on Alt-Right TV and WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
They love the from Britain shore. Would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and wine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf.